folks. We're back. Thanks to anybody who's happened to come across this podcast. I really appreciate it. Subscribe, like, find out more information about me. You can visit my website, jeffreydesiato.com. My name is Jeff Desiato, and I'm a pro wrestling fan. And I wanted to talk about this past week of the world of WWE wrestling. So, first off the bat, just still basking in the glow of WrestleMania, watching as much content as I can just to relive it. Absolutely, it's incredible. And now that we have a Raw and a SmackDown in the rear view post-WrestleMania, you can even see more stories coming to the forefront. And it starts to paint even a better picture of what we saw at WrestleMania. That's why this is the golden era, in my opinion, the new golden era. So one thing I just wanted to say off the bat is that Seth Rollins deserves his flowers. I just want to kind of talk about Seth Rollins a little bit. So everybody knows his story for the most part. It's been covered in multiple documentaries, multiple WWE programs, 365, 24, all of the different content that they put up on the network. We know that he turned on the Shield, and there's that whole thing. He was the first NXT champion. But I don't think he's even getting enough credit for what he is doing for WWE. Just look at WrestleMania. I mean, he puts over Drew McIntyre, who then puts over Damian Priest with CM Punk's interference. And he puts the shine on all of those guys because of how he carried himself during being the inaugural World Heavyweight Champion. I know Triple H got into this in the press conference, so I'm not trying to rehash anything. But what I think is incredible is this guy has had so many ups and downs in his career. He has endured terrible booking. Booking to the point that almost ruined his career, I would say, with the Hell in a Cell match with The Fiend in 2019. Dealing with Vince and all of this and just really not being able or comfortable being who he was supposed to be. Babyface heel, back and forth. And now what we've seen him do over the last 2 years, think about it. I mean, he's pushed to the side because Roman Reigns is handpicked, even though Seth Rollins is better in the ring and initially was better on the mic than Roman Reigns. But because it's the Roman Reigns era, he is never the guy. The only time he becomes the guy is because Roman Reigns left to recover and to get better. So I don't fault anybody for that, but that's the only time he gets the opportunity to be the guy. He's a little overzealous. And then he gets, you know, the lightning in the bottle of the Fiend character and Vince McMahon's pet project in that regard. Over pushes the Fiend. Fiend doesn't need a title. Doesn't need, that's not the it's like the Undertaker. It doesn't, he didn't, the Undertaker never needed the title. He was an attraction in and of himself. And then Seth Rollins just gets buried completely and goes on a journey of trying to figure out who he is. And then, you know, when you're looking for who's going to take the mantle from Roman Reigns, rather than going to Seth Rollins, he has to watch as they go and hand pick Cody Rhodes. Nothing against Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes is the guy. He is him. But from Seth Rollins' perspective, it's like, what else do I have to do to be seen as the guy? You know, and then he has to put Cody Rhodes over 3 times in a row. The third time, he has to lose to an opponent that doesn't even have a pectoral muscle. Like, that is just, talk about being a team player. He builds Cody Rhodes into this unstoppable force. And then Cody Rhodes has to go away for a while. And Seth Rollins is still fighting. He has a match against Omos. Everybody's like, what? You know, like, this doesn't make any sense. He makes an incredible match with Omos. He has a match with Logan Paul at WrestleMania, which is a great match. With Logan Paul, I mean, you put Seth Rollins in the ring with anybody, he's going to make them look good. He builds himself back. They have the Night of Champions where they crown him the World Heavyweight Champion. He's probably at the highest point of his career, right? CM Punk comes back, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a great match. For those of you that know, Seth Rollins is from Iowa, but is a well-known Bears, Chicago Bears fan. Like, he was in commercials for the Bears. He's always there as much as he can be. He's known for his tweets about football and hating football every time the Bears lose and everything. So you have this guy, Chicago-made, chick magnet punk. And then it's a great story. And we're on the way, and we're like, this is the main event. He's finally going to main event WrestleMania. And then he hurts his knee first, which I feel like we kind of forget that part. Because, you know, you're like, oh my gosh, he's having a match with Jinder Mahal. And he makes Jinder Mahal look good somehow, you know, after he had a good showing against The Rock at day one. And they reward him with a match against Seth Rollins. He ends up hurting his knee, partially tearing his MCL, tearing his meniscus. And then he rehabilitates so he can get back for Mania. And then CM Punk gets hurt, and that match is gone. Gone. And then everyone's talking about, like, why is he even at this WrestleMania kickoff, right? And he's just fighting and clawing to stay in the picture, overshadowed by The Rock and Cody Rhodes. Thankfully, he wasn't really overshadowed by Roman Reigns in the build-up to WrestleMania. I think Roman Reigns was the one who took the backseat mostly, if I'm being honest. But he cuts a promo on The Rock the 1 week, and you're just like, man, this guy's got it. And even the promo where he's trying to convince Cody Rhodes to fight him instead and trying to convince him that the World Heavyweight Championship belt is the belt that his father would have wanted because it was the Workman's title. It wasn't the Hollywood title. It wasn't the defended every 3 months title. I mean, that promo, go back and watch that promo. That guy is, I think he's so underrated on the mic, if I'm being honest. Obviously, he's got the cackle and he's got the bright outfits and everything like that, but I was never really a Seth Rollins guy, but I've watched this guy, and as someone myself who, you know, I've been through the grind, and I've been relied on in sticky situations time and time again in my life, but oftentimes am overlooked in, you know, for that top spot. I kind of empathize with Seth Rollins in that regard, just being candid. But you watch what he does. That promo, I remember being like, why does no one talk about how good Seth Rollins is on the mic? Like, I was astounded. I was like, I kind of want to see Seth Rollins versus Cody Rhodes again after that promo, which, like, we'd already seen it three times. This would have been the fourth, and it was so obviously a pivot. And then everybody's like, oh, Seth Rollins, what does he have to do with the tag match and everything? Like, he's the odd man out, and he does a phenomenal job selling this story, right? And then if you think about it, like, he is, without Seth Rollins, WrestleMania 40 isn't as good because of the storyline that they do. The tie back of Seth Rollins saying, I'm going to be your shield. And everyone's like, oh, he's going to turn on Cody. He's going to turn on Cody. And the whole time I was like, that cannot be the way they're going, because there's something to this. Like, he's the guy in a way, you know. Like, obviously Cody Rhodes is the company guy, and he is fantastic. I'm a huge Cody Rhodes fan, but I will say after WrestleMania 40, I have earned an incredible amount of respect for Seth Rollins. Colby Lopez is his real name, because this guy is putting his body on the line to make WWE shine. Thankfully, they didn't have him take the pin in the night one tag team match, because I think that would have just been overkill. But he loses to Drew McIntyre, right? Obviously, he's beat up, so they protect him in that way. But phenomenal match, right out the gate. Gets that crowd hotter than it is the entire weekend up to that point. Emotional, engaging. You see some of the work that just kind of gets overlooked. I think he genuinely was happy for Drew McIntyre when he said, like, you deserve this, or this is your moment. I forget what he said. You can kind of read his lips, and he's, like, in tears. And I think he got kicked in the eye and like, bruised up his eye really bad. And he does that, and he's hobbled, obviously. And then he comes out and is involved in the main event match, watching Cody Rhodes be crowned the next guy, which is the position that he is on record multiple times saying, like, I want to be that guy. Like, give me the ball. And he helps him by keeping his word. And what a moment. Like, obviously, we're in the crowd. We see Shield come up. And I'm on video saying, like, if this is Jon Moxley, I will freak out. Because how would they have kept that a secret, right? It's obviously Seth Rollins. The storyline makes sense completely. And he goes on, doesn't really do anything in the match. Part of me wonders, was he supposed to? Is he legitimately just really hobbled? And they're like, well, we'll just have you kind of be there as a distraction. I don't know. We won't really know until the storyline continues, which is what makes this so fascinating. What makes it so interesting is because Roman Reigns, this character development, it had been 10 years from when Seth Rollins hit him in the back with the chair. We saw the callback, obviously, with Sami Zayn doing the same thing to him. And the way they've told this Roman Reigns story, he pushes people to turn on him. If you notice that, like, he didn't push Sami away. I mean, he did in his, like, obviously in his manipulative way. And he's a bully, so we get that. But he was willing to accept Sami Zayn. And then it just got to the point where Sami Zayn, pure soul that he is, couldn't continue down that path anymore. And he turns on him. Jey Uso, same thing. And now we're starting to see the fruit of all of this. And it's so, and you look at it and you're like, Seth Rollins, he did it. He was the Shield. Instead of Cody getting hit with a chair, Seth Rollins got hit with a chair, allowing Cody Rhodes to win the title. And then I have to believe that he's not that good of an actor. He's watching this guy, and, you know, as much of kayfabe or you know, where they talk about how they don't really like each other. I don't think that's necessarily the case maybe anymore, but they had a rivalry, you know, and the whole Dusty's Kid thing. And it's fascinating to watch because this guy, he's the Bret Hart of our generation. You can put anybody in the ring with him and he will make them look good, and he will look good at the same time. He tells stories, but even with Bret Hart, Vince was hesitant to make him the guy. He had the whole Lex Express thing and everything, like, and it feels that way. You know, is there something missing from Seth Rollins' presentation? I don't know. Like, some people are like, he just doesn't have that it factor, like a Roman Reigns or a Cody Rhodes. I don't necessarily know if that's true. But what I can say is I came away from WrestleMania 40 with an immense amount of respect and love for this character, Seth Rollins. And I think they did an incredible job building stories down the road. We have to see this Seth Rollins-Roman Reigns story. Because now that Cody's finished his story, Seth Rollins-Roman Reigns is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. I wouldn't be surprised if that headlines a pay-per-view in 2024. Because I don't think Roman and Cody need to touch again. You got The Rock, obviously, and then maybe The Rock and Roman, but I would love to see a Seth-Roman match. And then I don't know what... I'd be interested to see if down the road, now that Vince is gone, if somehow Jon Moxley would ever consider coming back to WWE. Because talk about long-term storytelling. Oh my goodness. I don't know what his contract situation is. I don't really follow AEW. But man, that inkling on WrestleMania Sunday, when that Shield music started... And you could tell in the buzz in the crowd, people were like, wait a minute, what if it's not Seth? What if they kept this secret and they're going to reunite Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins to stop Roman Reigns? Oh my gosh, I was like, oh. And obviously, it was a fleeting thought in the moment. But at that point, you're like, what's going to happen? Nobody knows what's going to happen. Everything's being thrown out the window and thrown at the wall. And it's just... I mean, you're going banana, as the late, great Pat Patterson would say. And anyway, I just wanted to really take an episode, really, to focus on Seth Rollins because he is phenomenal. You know, I know we have AJ Styles as the tune of, you know, the phenomenal one. But, man, just fantastic. And, like, he earned my respect and he earned my fandom over the last year as the World Heavyweight Champion. And as the catalyst, really, for Cody Rhodes ultimately defeating the Tribal Chief. And I think he should get credit for that. Let's really quickly just recap where we are headed, because Raw was good. SmackDown was good. And what's really fascinating is where we're going to go now. Like, I was saying at the very beginning of this episode, what's amazing now is the way they're telling these stories is that things that didn't make sense to us, like a lot, I think a lot of people are still looking at the product in the old way of thinking. Something happens and we're like, well, that's not what I thought was going to happen. What's going on, right? And Sam Roberts often says, the podcast I love to listen to, Not Sam Wrestling, let them cook, right? Because now we're seeing things and things that were like, that wasn't that good, right? Or things that we didn't necessarily like, the Jimmy J match, for instance, like things that weren't, they didn't deliver the way we thought they would deliver. Then you watch them continue to plant more seeds. And then in a strange way, it almost redeems the thing that in the moment we didn't like, right? So you go back and you look at WrestleMania now after this first Raw and this first SmackDown, and you're like, oh my gosh, like this is something else altogether. You have the, real quickly, just to run down Raw, you have, sorry, I'm just getting it up here. Incredible presentation with Cody Rhodes at the beginning. Like this era of blurring the lines of Cody Rhodes, the guy, or Cody Reynolds, the guy, and Cody Rhodes, the wrestler, just really fascinating. Then you have an unannounced Rock show up, right, and plant the seeds for their feud, which now that, I mean, I want to see that match more than I want to see Roman Rock at this point, because, man, did those guys deliver. I mean, just lights out. And, you know, there's all the story about what did he hand him, all that kind of stuff, and he's got to go away. I think he's filming from May 1st to August 1st. SummerSlam is August 3rd. That's tight. I don't know if they'll be able to get it for SummerSlam. I don't buy that they're going to wait a year to have a Roman-Cody, I'm sorry, a Rock-Cody match, and then another year for the Rock-Roman match. That feels excessive, and by then Rock's going to be like 54 years old. I don't think that with somebody of the Rock's age that you can build stories that far in advance, considering they didn't even know if Rock was going to be there until about October. I don't think you can, I know he's on the board, I know he's going to be involved, but you don't know that the Rock can perform like he just did 2 years from now. You can't bank on that. You don't know. There's a lot that could change. So what I would say is try to get Rock Roman sometime this year. I'm sorry, Rock, I keep doing that. Rock Cody sometime this year, lead up to Roman Rock 41. I think that's the safer bet, but I don't know. He is the long gamer, as he said. So we have that whole, you know, what a great thing to look forward to, though. You're planting those seeds, and you have a couple matches. Ilya Dragunov defeating Nakamura. Six-man tag match with John Cena and R-Truth and The Miz, which is just so surreal to have, like, The Miz as a face, right, with R-Truth, and then John Cena's on his team. Roxanne Perez debuts against Indy Hartwell. I'm just kind of skimming through these. And then you have Sami Zayn, Chad Gable against Imperium. And obviously, we're setting up this thing with Sami Zayn, Chad Gable in Montreal on Monday Night Raw. I really hope they don't make Chad Gable a heel, unless he wants to be a heel. I still feel like there's more to that Gunther, Chad Gable story. It feels weird that they would just harp on his family crying and all this and then just move on. Who knows what's going to happen with that. But you're going to have Chad probably be in the situational heel. I don't know if he'll turn full heel. The Alpha Academy is out there still, and Maxxine Dupri and Akira Tozawa. Like, there's just a lot of loose ends, so I'm interested to see. But that's what's good about this era, is that, like, I want to see how it plays out. I trust, they've earned the trust that they've already thought about this. They're not just throwing it at the wall week to week like in the past. They already know where they're going with Chad Gable. They already know what that means for Alpha Academy. They already know Sami Zayn, Gunther, Imperium. They know all of that. And they're just leaving the breadcrumbs. Jade Cargill squash match over Chelsea Green. Not much to say about that. And then the Fatal 4-Way match where CM Punk interferes to give Jey Uso the victory over Drew McIntyre. That storyline is just fantastic as well. Man, oh man. And then, you know, I don't really get into AEW, but they had the whole debacle of showing the footage of Punk from All In and just burying themselves. And Punk doesn't look any worse. I mean, like, he said that he was the one who put hands on it, but based on the conversation that happened and everything, yeah, it's just no good can come from rehashing all of that stuff. And the point of this podcast is more just to kind of talk about what I'm thinking. I don't want to spend a lot of grand, you know, a lot of detail, because that's not what this is going to be. Excuse me. But other interesting thing is, if you've seen on Peacock the Bray Wyatt documentary, we see planted seeds for an Uncle Howdy return, and now we're starting to see those Easter eggs pop up again. I don't know if we've seen any QR codes, but we've seen like the static and the hidden messages and things like that. So I'm interested for that to happen. I think they've done it tastefully as an honoring of Bray. They waited a year. I think it's been almost a year, right, since he passed away, which is hard to believe. But I think they're doing that the right way. And I'm interested to see where it goes. Like, if this was something that had been outlined, and they're going to have Taylor Rotunda, Bo Dallas, kind of carry the mantle, paying homage to Bray, Wyndham Rotunda. So Raw after WrestleMania is back. That was fantastic. I just finished watching SmackDown, another good show. They're planting seeds. Cody Rhodes sets himself up, and we're going to have two triple threat matches. The winner of those two triple threat matches are going to have a number one contenders match next week to decide who fights Cody Rhodes at Backlash in France. So the best part of this episode for me was the developments of the Bloodline. You could say like that it kind of came out of nowhere, but there have been rumors obviously about Tama Tonga coming in and things like that, but I loved where they went. I love that they didn't feel the need to hammer us over the head like, hey, this Solo Sikoa is, he's going to take over the Bloodline. Get ready. I like that it kind of just accelerated, right? It was fantastic. I thought it was really cool, and I can't wait to see the story that unfolds. What is Jimmy going to do now that he's basically been destroyed? And the last time we saw him was feuding with Jay. Will Jay welcome him back? Will the Usos reunite? What does the WWE draft say about all of this? Tama Tonga coming in, Solo kind of exerting himself as the next in line, taking over the Bloodline. And I think the best part of it was when Paul went to call Roman Reigns and he took the phone and he threw it down. The reaction of the crowd was like, oh no, I can't believe he just did that. Like, he is usurping the head of the table by doing that. He saw his moment to strike, and he took it. And that's fantastic. I think that's the way you keep the story interesting while Roman's away, is developments. I think we really stagnated. And I think that was why that was the fear when Cody Rhodes loses in 39, is that that's kind of what happened. We saw kind of a snail's pace for a while. Obviously, the Bloodline broke up. We had the Bloodline Civil War. We had Jay against Roman for SummerSlam. But then nothing. After that, no explanation as to why Jimmy went back to the Bloodline. Like, it's kind of just been spinning his wheels. Then The Rock shows up and breathes life back into it out of nowhere, not the way we expected it at all. But now, this development with Solo coming in and really taking over, I think this is going to be really interesting. And I think we're going to see a lot of story building here. And I'll be interested to see how it works, because The Rock's going away, Roman's away. Can these guys take the ball and run with it? Can they keep this story interesting? In hindsight, obviously, with Cody, the way he won at WrestleMania 40, it makes WrestleMania 39 even better, and I would argue probably the best WrestleMania. When you put 39 and 40 together, those two WrestleManias are almost perfect. I mean, night one was rough on some of it. But I think I'd be interested to see, if we go back and watch night one, if it holds up, because I think a lot of, there was just that energy of like The Rock and the Cody finishing the story and stuff. And I think it just kind of overshadowed the rest of the card in a way. And night two, people were more excited because the weather was better. And that was the night. They knew they were going to see something special. So I think a lot of it had more to do with that. I don't think it was a bad card. But anyway, we see the two triple threat matches. LA Knight wins, which is the right call. And we see a squash match. Poor Cameron Grimes, man. I don't understand why they draft these people if they don't have a plan for them. Maybe that'll change in this new era, this new draft, that people, they'll have a plan in place for these people. I don't know. But Cameron Grimes is basically just an enhancement talent, which is kind of crazy. I wasn't really following him in NXT, but I know a lot of people had high hopes for him and really enjoyed him and his character. He had a big feud with LA Knight, with the $1 million championship, etc. So who knows what's going on there. Tiffany and Naomi had a match. Naomi won, which is interesting. You're going to have two faces. Naomi challenging Bayley, so that'll be interesting to see what happens with that. We'll see what happened. Oh, and then we had a tag match between Chelsea Green and Piper Niven against Jade and Bianca. Be interesting to see where they go with Jade and Bianca. Are they going to stay a tag team for a while? I think it freshens Bianca up, to be honest. She's kind of been spinning her wheels, especially since Charlotte got hurt. And her feud, which was probably going to be her WrestleMania match, got taken away. So it'll be interesting to see if they stay together for a little while and that shine from Bianca translates to Jade Cargill. And then maybe Bianca gets jealous of that, turns heel. Because I think that would be really interesting. I don't think you can make Jade Cargill a heel yet. Because she's brand new. But yeah, it should be interesting to see where that heads. And then we had this, the Kevin Owens, Rey Mysterio, AJ Styles match was fantastic. And we have, what's interesting, we have LA Knight against AJ Styles again. We also, I forgot to mention, we have the story brewing of, I mean, obviously Carlito is the one who hurt Dragon Lee. It was interesting, we didn't see Andrade on this episode, but I'm interested to see where that, I thought maybe there would be some developments there that would keep Rey from winning, or if Rey won to go against LA Knight, that there would be chicanery next week from Carlito, maybe being jealous or something like that. But interesting, I like a lot of irons in the fire, a lot of things slow cooking. I love it. I'd love to see this stuff, and they're telegraphing a little bit, but they're not beating you over the head with it. It's good pace, storytelling. Sorry, I'm just getting collecting my thoughts. So we're going to have a second LA Knight, AJ Styles match. And I'm thinking we're heading towards a trilogy. So what I would foresee happening is they have this match, right? And then we have, I think AJ Styles has to go over. So maybe we have a trilogy. AJ Styles wins the second match, maybe through heelish means. So he gets his win back. And then we have a rubber match. So AJ Styles is Backlash, right? Cody Rhodes loses to Cody Rhodes. And then we have the rubber match at, I guess it's Clash at the, oh no, I'm sorry, King and Queen of the Ring. I don't know how that's going to work. They haven't really talked about what that's going to be. Also, really interesting to see who's going to be the King of the Ring. Like, is that something that LA Knight would get? Is that something that a new up-and-comer would get to build them? I don't know. It's really interesting to see that we're turning to the King and Queen of the Ring. I could see Jade Cargill being Queen of the Ring, although I wouldn't see her having that many matches. I guess that's probably, maybe that's what Bianca is, because she's not in the title picture right now. Because you have Rhea Ripley, that match isn't happening yet. They're both on different brands as of right now. And I believe, yeah, it should be interesting to see how that goes. And then you have a babyface Bayley. Unless you're going to turn Bianca heel quickly, I don't see that match happening anytime soon. So it'd be interesting to see if maybe Bianca gets Queen of the Ring to kind of keep her in the top spot. But I'm excited, man. We got so many pay-per-views coming up. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they do with... we have Jey Uso against Damian Priest coming up. I'm assuming that's going to be at Backlash. What's nice is a new regime. I don't think we're going to see a lot of rematches at Backlash, like sometimes we've seen in the past with WrestleMania. But it's interesting to see how fast they move with this story of the bloodline, to see if there's a Jimmy and Jay something or other happening. If the Damian Priest Jey Uso match is not for Backlash, I feel like they probably should put that belt on that pay-per-view to elevate it, to keep it in the forefront. But we'll see about that. That's really all. I think I hit all the points I wanted to hit. I appreciate you guys for tuning in. Anybody out there that's listening, I doubt it, but it's just nice for me to kind of imagine that there's a friend that I'm sharing this information with. And I'm loving wrestling right now. I'm loving where we're headed. It's fun to fantasy book. It's fun to think about all the various opportunities, new faces in the mix for things. It's really exciting. And then we have the draft coming up in a couple weeks. So a lot of possibilities. So this is why wrestling is cool. This is why wrestling is fun. It's a nice escape, and it's entertaining. So I will talk to you guys later.